John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning, everybody. 9 after 8 o'clock, Friday. Yes, Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here, Studio 4. Mr. Mayor, hello. Good morning.
Going to be a beautiful weekend. Not too humid, not too hot. Very few clouds, a few on Sunday, so the forecast. Now, weather God
is listening. You certainly are knowledgeable of the weather forecast for the week.
I happen to hear it, not on your radio station, but on the other one that I listen to every once in a while.
That one with the BB numbers?
Well, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's, you know.
That's all right. Hey, listen, I understand summertime in the city, that the city actually has some summertime in the city stuff scheduled.
We started this a few years ago. Each summer, we close down Main Street from one end, of the city to the other, but Park Avenue from like 72nd Street all the way down to the Brooklyn Bridge. This year got a lot of attention. There are these swimming pools
on
the street.
The diving dumpsters.
You know, some people, they write some of the stuff. This has gotten publicity around. This is why our tourism, we may set a record this year in terms of number of tourists, where every other city, or almost every other city in the country, is double-digit declines. It's because you do the edgy, different things, and it gets you publicity.
I have not seen a picture of you in the dumpster.
And you probably won't. But for the life of me, I can't understand. I mean, I don't know what the anything new they don't like.
Anything unusual, yeah, exactly.
If there's swimming pools and they don't want to go in, nobody's forcing them to do it. So why criticize others who want to do it?
When they were describing those dumpsters, they said that they were, I think, if I remember correctly, you would end up, if you could put 10 people at a time in the maximum, and everybody would have 4 square feet.
Right. I mean, it's to say it's a publicity stunt isn't giving it credit, but it's a publicity stunt. I mean, come on.
For the artist that came up with the idea.
A lot of people at the beginning didn't like the street closed at Park Avenue. Phenomenally successful. 3 Saturdays in a row, I think. And it did the number of people that come out. And it certainly doesn't hurt traffic. There's very little traffic on a Saturday morning on Park Avenue.
So do you do this street closing stuff in the summertime in all boroughs?
There are some things in each of the boroughs. You call 311, they'll tell you. But, there's Summer Walk thing and Myrtle Avenue in Brooklyn and Burnside and Jerome and Morris Avenues in the Bronx and Queens Sunnyside. I mean, a whole bunch of things. Yeah, I mean, you try to do it as much. It gets more publicity and is more valuable where you have big concentrations of people. So you go to, a part of Queens or Staten Island where there's a lot of open space. Closing a road doesn't add anything. It doesn't get anybody to come there because it's fundamentally not as concentrated, and they have a lot of other alternatives. But in the more crowded, more dense, I guess the right word of areas of some of the boroughs, you create something, and it's something different.
I'm a big fan of that new park that we built over in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Bridge Park. That thing is awesome.
You wait until it's done. I mean, it'll take a number of years before you have the money to finish that, but it is just spectacular. I went over there. They have a movie series and a concert series. I pointed out to the audience that the only thing between me and them watching the movie was my speech. And
did they boo you off the
No,
stage?
Because I think they all knew that we had to wait until it got dark. That wasn't quite true. But it's spectacular views. That's a great park. But, you go down Hudson River Park, it just goes on and on and on. The event and venue and after venue, and each one's different. And it's really East Side coming up more and more. These are the things that make the city the city.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, got to keep doing them.
All right.
And find a ways to pay for them.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of which, the state finally has a budget. How does it affect the city? Good, bad, different? What you expected?
Expected, I suppose, is the right word. A couple things they took out, a couple things they should have taken out. On one hand, I'm sympathetic. They have to balance the budget. On the other hand, I'm not sympathetic. They should have started doing it years and years ago. On the other hand, I'm not sympathetic because a lot of the fixes were postponed to next year. And next year is really worrisome. And that's why we are out there already. Here we are less than a month or just a month into the next fiscal year and trying to find ways to reduce our expenses because we know what's going to happen next year. You don't start this stuff In the spring, when we're facing a budget that we have to balance, you do it starting now. So combining motor pools or purchasing or those kinds of things, finding extra space, and when we can move people out, creating in spaces where the leases are about to need to be renewed, not having to renew them, those kinds of things. That's not the be-all and end-all, but if you could save $500 million a year, that's a lot of money. Even for New York City with a $65 billion budget.
Senate passed a $26 billion aid package for Medicaid and teachers.
Well, the Medicaid, I had assumed we were going to get that money.
Is this FMAP money?
Okay. This is the FMAP money. It still needs the House to pass it. I assume they will. Of course, I assumed both would do it a long time ago. Was I nervous about it? Yeah, I mean, I've said that, I think, here when we talked about it. But there was enough of a chance to leave it in, and we didn't have to make any decisions right now. Assuming it gets passed, that is one less thing to worry about. But it doesn't improve our budget because the money was already in there. The education money, it's not clear what you can do with that money. These federal grants now are having lots of strings attached. Using it to replace other city monies, that's what most cities want to do. Take the federal money and take their own money out, reduce their own taxes and use the federal money or buy other things. Generally, the federal government tries to keep you from doing that. Can you use it? The one thing we got to be careful of, we don't want to use it. You don't want to use it to give a raise or hire new teachers when next year we're not going to have that money. And we already have that problem. We have used in the city education budget roughly $800 million. That's a lot of money.
It's a whole bunch.
It's more than you get paid.
And me. Just a little.
Yeah, well, I only had
a buck.
I only had a buck, right?
I get two.
And as Alan Hevesy once said, you get what you pay for.
Thank you.
I think he said it about me. The $800 million was great, except that we used it to pay salaries. And next year, there is no $800 million.
And the state's done the same thing with their stimulus
Absolutely.
Money.
Absolutely. So next year, we know in education, I was talking to Joel Klein, it's about $1.3 billion hole before you even start. And who knows what we're going to have to do with the overall budget. And you say, well, you can't cut education. You can't cut education, corrections, sanitation, police, and fire. And yet that's where all the money is. And literally, that's where all of the money is. The other stuff is, by comparison, small.
And so that means you're going to have to cut, at least somehow,
find
all of that.
Well, that's why you want to find ways to do things. The motor pool is the most visual that you can see. If every agency does their own maintenance on their cars and trucks, if you combine them in one spot, it would be more efficient, and maybe that's the sort of thing you farm out.
I read that your new efficiency deputy mayor is talking about combining bills instead of having separate tax, water, put it all in one.
Some of those things save a lot of money. The finance commissioner, David Frankel, really is the genius behind a lot of that. He and Steve Goldsmith are really a great team. And finding ways to let you, for example, pay your bill. If you have a ticket or a tax or a fee or a fine or whatever, and you want to pay it, look, the penalty is to keep you from doing it again. The money offsets other taxes we'd have to impose because we still want to have the money to spend. But why make it more painful for you than it has to be? So being able to pay it electronically. You know, I mean, that's going into that kind of a world, and there's no reason why the city shouldn't be doing it. So some of those things are just to make it easier. Some of the things save money. Some of the things bring in more revenue. Going after people who, slipped through the system. They broke the law and they slipped through the system. There's no reason why, if you pay your fines, I should pay mine.
Absolutely. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. Let me take my first break right here, and then we'll get back. And also, before the morning is over, your opportunity to ask Mayor Michael Bloomberg a question is as easy as dialing up 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Get in line right now. You got to get through Mike Figliola to get to the questions and to the mayor.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
22 minutes now after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. FDNY tests for applicants thrown out by a judge this week. Had a long conversation about it this morning. It is hard for me to understand why the judge would have come to that, talking with people that have actually taken the test, including minorities, and their explanation and their reaction to it, those that have passed, and now they're stuck. They're in a hole. They can't get a job.
Fundamentally, the judge said, I don't think I'm simplifying it too much. He didn't think the test measured what the skill sets you need to be a firefighter. I don't know that there is, other than two basic things that you want to test. One is just raw intelligence. I want the person that comes through that door when I'm in a fire, comes through to save me, to be the smartest person that you can find, because who knows what he's going to find or she's going to find on the other side of the door. You can't predict. We're going into a world of much more technology and complexity. And so the basic IQ test, now some people say IQ tests don't really measure intelligence because there are cultural biases built in. It would be a function of how good an education you got as a kid and whether your parents sent you to a testing clinic or whatever, so that you can, to some extent, you do better or worse on the test depending on those kinds of things. And it really isn't better or worse on the test based on your intelligence. But no test is perfect. If you want something, I know what I want for my kids and me on the other side of that door. I want, the first thing is, the person, man or woman, coming through that to be the smartest we can find. Second thing is, I want them to be as physically fit as we can possibly be. Why? I don't know who he's going to have to carry. He's got to, or she, carry one person out, two people out, somebody way overweight, a baby, move a beam. You don't know. So now you can't have just strength and you can't have just IQ. You want a balance. You have to have a balance between the two of them. And there are plenty of people, you know, of slighter build, or women who may be my size or even thinner and shorter, who have plenty of strength. You know, there is a reasonable ways of saying, well, okay. Most times firefighters have to carry somebody out this weight. We'll give an extra 50%. If somebody's 400 pounds and you go through that door, nobody's going to be able to carry them out. So you can set a standard, a reasonable standard of strength. And men and women, the stronger ones, the better fit ones will pass. And those that don't have that kind of muscle mass or whatever it is, strength, they're not going to pass. And they shouldn't be firefighters. Same thing with the intellect. Some people pass, some people wouldn't. Regardless of ethnicity. I mean, if you want to say, I don't care what the ethnicity is of the person coming through the door to save me. First and foremost, government's job is to provide public safety and increase your life expectancy and make sure that you can lead a healthy life. Those are the kinds of things that government is supposed to do. You need an education. We've got to put out the fires. We've got to send an ambulance. We've got to stop the bad guys. Those kinds of things. Now, would you like to have your workforce totally diverse? Yes, but the most important thing is that it's open to everybody, that it doesn't discriminate. If some people don't want to go into that career, forcing them into it just because you have this quota system doesn't make any sense to me. So, you know, I can tell you, I watched and worked with Nick Scapetta, the former fire commissioner, for 8 years while he worked as hard as anybody could work in terms of trying to attract the most diverse group of applicants that we could get.
Millions were spent in recruiting.
Yeah, a lot of it, incidentally, was with the donated money, too. We had campaigns on buses and subways. We have classes in schools. We have firefighters going around describing the job. And, you know, it isn't, people say, oh, well, you know, families have an advantage. I don't know that families have an advantage. Families, it isn't like you grow up as a kid and your father teaches you to put number 3 foam on number 7 oil. It is that it's a great job. That's, I think, the one thing that's handed down within the families. And so we've been out there trying to explain to people that this is a great job. Very few firefighters quit, at least not before 20 years. They like this job. And if you talk to a firefighter, I'm sure there's a couple of disgruntled ones, but most of them have enormous pride and take enormous satisfaction in the job they do. They love it. It's a great job. and at least they may not be for you or me, but they think so. We've attracted a fire department that keeps bringing down, making the city safe, sadly, like with that tragedy the other day of the mother and the children. And there have been a few fires. I think we've had half a dozen homicides in the fire.
With fire, yeah.
Yeah, but nevertheless, they keep making it safer. So, you know, the judge didn't see it all that way. He says, well, anybody that's in the top half of the class is smart enough to do the job, and I don't think the guy that is 49% down the list is any less able to do the job than the guy that's number two in the list. So he does what he wants to do, what he'd call banding. Everybody in the top half is equal. You know, that's like what this craziness with what's proficiency. The kid with the highest score is still more able to do the work than the kid with the lowest score. And the gradations are roughly linear right down from top to bottom. And you can have your cutoffs any place you want. But a system where it's just nothing to do with who you know, nothing to do with what you look like, where you came from, what your orientation is, or gender, anything else. You take the test, you start at the top, you work your way down the list. Seems to me to be the most democratic and fairest way you can do it. It also will get the kind of person that you most want to have come through that door when your life is
in. Isn't that the same thing they do in the fire, in the police department, when they do lieutenant and sergeant up the ladder?
Moving up the ladder in the fire department and the police department, you have to study. It's very hard to move up in both of those organizations. You study like heck, and they get to be tougher jobs. You get paid more as you move up generally. But it is those moving up in management in the police department and the fire job are both very tough to do in terms of the testing you have to go through. And yes, it's strictly a test. And in those cases, however, it is generally a test on the questions are about procedures and facts pertaining to the job, because now you're in the agency, police or fire, and now you have to work your way up, and some general knowledge. But if you can't read and understand what you're reading and ask questions and understand answers and manage, you shouldn't be in these departments. And people say it's hard to measure. Yeah, life's hard to measure.
You're exactly right. Life isn't. Life
so, anyways, is we're going to appeal the judge's ruling. We'll try to get a stay from him, and then we'll appeal. In the meantime, he said, no, we can't hire the 300 that we'd planned to hire right now.
I talked with one of them this morning, and he is furious.
He said, well, you know, you can use overtime. We can use overtime to fill in instead of hiring a bunch of rookies, except who's going to pay? I mean, in the end, if we use overtime to fill in, every other agency in the city is going to have to do with fewer people because the taxpayer is only going to spend so much. And there's this attitude that, oh, no matter what it is, you can always just raise taxes. Tax the rich. Tax this group. Tax that. You know, tax everybody that's got blonde hair, blue eyes, lives in this place. I mean, we'll just pick some group that's small, and they won't have enough political power to stop it, and we'll tax them. And the overall tax burden in the city is really difficult. That's high. And what we don't want to do is dissuade people from staying and leaving. And that's why that hedge fund tax, you know, it got a lot of press because Jody Rell, she did what she's supposed to do. She's supposed to be out there touting the advantages of living and working and having a business in her state. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's what the president's job is, of touting that America is a place to do business as opposed to overseas. That's part of what you try to make, stress the advantages and downplay the disadvantages of wherever you are. The problem with the hedge fund taxes, it got taken out only because people screamed and it got an awful lot of publicity. But what does it say about what they might do next year? And that's the worrisome thing here, an attitude that business doesn't count because all I care about is not having my group get taxed. You know, and in the end, if you want services, we've all got to pay, not one group. You make everybody pay.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We're going to take a break on the half hour. 8:32 is our time. Again, a reminder, what do we have here? I've got one line open, line number 5-800-321-0710, if you've got a question for the mayor. 8:32 at WOR. Show Mark.
Give John a call now. 800-321-0710. John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We continue with the mayor, and we'll get to you here in the next break. 800-321-0710. The mosque, we know where you stand on the mosque situation. Is the conversation over? What's going to happen, do you think?
Well, I know where I stand on the mosque. I just don't think the government should tell people where they can pray and where they can build houses of worship. If it's zoned for that kind of, for uses that are consistent with the law, then people should be able to do it. You know, the more you believe, the more religious you are, the more you should want to keep the government out of religion, because someday it's not going to be your religion. Now, I suppose if you don't care, if you're an atheist or something, then, you know, no harm, no foul, why would you care? But to the extent that you are, you practice your a religion, you don't want the government to set which one. In this case, you know, landmarks, 9-0, there was no redeeming value. Not one person on the board thought, nobody pressured them, they just asked, is there anything redeeming that we have to save in this? You can't save every building in the city, we'd never build anything. And they said, no, nothing. And people want to use the landmarks to accomplish their goal of preventing a mosque being built. That's not what landmarks is there for. Landmarks is plain and simple, straight, no arguments and no going off their mission, not mission, purpose. And that's redeeming historical value, however they phrase it. There's a suit. It'll be thrown out by the courts right away. Constitution protects. And particularly, you know, even and the more conservative the court is, the more likely they are to throw it out, that, you know, this strict separation of church and state. Hope so, anyways. So I think that'll be done quickly. You know, and then people say, well, you know, do they have the money? Can they raise the money? Where does it come from? I don't know. And government shouldn't. Do you really want every time they pass the basket in your church and you throw a buck in, they run over and say, okay, now, you know, where do you come from? Who are your parents? Where'd you get this money? No, this is just not. And I can't for the life of me. A handful of people ought to be ashamed of themselves. Guy wrote me an email this morning. President of a company that lost a lot of people in the World Trade Center. And it was just a two-line thing. He said, I was really saddened that you had to make this speech. I was very glad you did. And I wrote him back an email. I couldn't have said it better myself. It is a shame that we even have to talk about this. Somebody wants to build a mosque. And, you know, the firefighters that went into that building, they didn't say, well, where do you pray? I'm going to decide whether or not to put my life on the line to save you. So, and most of the families that I've talked to, of course, this is, our loved one gave their lives to protect the very freedoms that we're talking about here. People being able to practice the religion and say what they want to say and be in control of their own destiny. You know, you really want the terrorists to win without doing anything else? Or, you know, they will say, oh, well, then their plane crash did work. It may have taken 9 years, but it worked. No, you can't do this.
We were talking earlier this morning, very early this morning, in fact, about One World Trade Center, which was the Freedom Tower.
Yeah,
which
is the Freedom Tower. I still call it the Freedom
Tower. Well, that's our question. Why was the name changed?
I have absolutely no idea. Talk to the Port Authority.
I know it's a Port Authority
decision. No idea. But, you know, some
don't
things.
Don't you think the Freedom Tower is a much more appropriate name?
Avenue of the Americas is still 6th Avenue. Okay? I mean, you know, we'll probably always call it the Freedom Tower. What's interesting about the One World Trade Center, Freedom Tower, is that Durst just paid $100 million, I think it was, for 10% of the building. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people said, oh, nobody's ever going to want to be there. Wrong. People will be there. The real estate market is heating up across the city, but particularly downtown. And there's three other buildings, office towers, to be built. Work is going on all three of them. Number four is up probably, if I had to guess, just looking at it, 10 stories, 15 stories, something like that.
What's the status of the train center, the transportation hub?
They're doing the underground work.
That was one of the most complicated things I've ever seen.
Yeah, because everything's being built around and in and among. We've got one little corner of the World Trade Center Memorial where I don't know how we finally resolved it, but underneath the plaza goes some stuff for the transportation thing. and they can't do it until something else, but we'll work it out. There's some 2,000 to 3,000 people that work every day on that site. You've never seen as many cranes in your life. It is phenomenal.
And that Freedom Tower is going up by a floor a week almost.
Governor Christie's got a couple of appointees, and Governor Patterson has. And Chris Ward is the executive director, and a lot of this stuff is really Chris doing. He's done a spectacular job. Chris used to work as one of my commissioners. Very smart guy. I don't always agree with him, but he's working as hard as anybody can, and they really are getting it going. And, you know, at the beginning, everybody said, we're going to build it bigger and stronger. I mean, people were out there, we're going to rebuild the World Trade Center. We want Donald Trump to come in and build towers exactly. And, you know, Schumer and Bloomberg probably and everybody else, we're not going to let the terrorists win. We're going to stick it to them showing we rebuild. Yeah, well, then as things got tough, it was harder to find people. You know, Chuck was still there and I was still there, but some others had walked away. And now you don't hear the criticisms anymore. Deutsche Bank Tower, where we tragically lost two firefighters, is down. Maybe that's down to the 15th story or something.
Oh, I think even less than that.
Even less than that.
Yeah.
Coming down. Why did it take so long? Look, should have, would have, and could have. I keep coming back to there have been seven different governors between New York and New Jersey, and the governor's mad because the Port Authority is run by the two governors. There's the public and private, and then there's the federal, state, and city, and then there's agencies, and then there was a lawsuit between insurance companies and the owner of the lease, the Silverstein properties, and, you know, it's phenomenally complex, but it's going to get done. And we have hired a guy to represent the museum, the memorial, McGovern, who was there all the time helping to make sure we're on budget, on time, working with the Port Authority. We took a tour a couple weeks ago with the board of the World Trade Center Museum, although now they call it the 9/11, whatever, everybody keeps renaming. I'm the chairman, and I don't even use the new name, much to Joe Daniels' annoyance, my executive director. But it's enormous, and it's going to be phenomenally moving. And then we have this little store around the corner in a side street, hard to find, sells pictures of what and things that try to explain what happens there. They're about to have their millionth visitor in a year. So when people say, oh, who's going to want to come, this will stay a place where millions of people will come every year for very far, long after you and I are gone. And keep in mind, it's downtown where there's the Statue of Liberty and Governor's Island. And
people come here anyway.
Sure. So, you know, that's just another thing on the list.
You met with the vice president yesterday.
The VP, who would have thought I could have breakfast with the vice president? This is actually the
third. I know you don't give up. You don't give up conversations. But what was on his mind? I mean, what was he?
Well, number one, he's taking a 2-week vacation, which I pointed out to him may be well earned. But I haven't had one in 9 years. Why him?
And you know, I can't believe you.
That's
brought
the
that
difference
up.
Between the federal government and the city government. I got to work for a living. He gets paid a lot more than I do too. Now, Joe Biden is one of the nicer guys you'll ever want to meet. I think both sides of the aisle, no matter how partisan they are in the Senate, they like Joe, and the House too, they like Joe Biden. There's the old joke, which he tells, somebody wants Obama to stop using a teleprompter and him to use one. No, he's, we spent an hour and a half. His interest, what's happening in the economy here, what are our views? Because remember, because of Wall Street, we have a national and international perspective. I get a little bit of from a company and the foundation. You know, you're always talking to people, and so you have some views on whether right or wrong on what people expect and like and don't like and that sort of thing. We talked a little politics, you know, what's going to happen in the fall. He said, you know, what can federal government do to help the city, and do I have any advice for him? And you know, my advice to Joe is be yourself, and he does. That's what's charming about him.
Let me ask you the question this week.
But he's very smart, incidentally.
Warren Buffett, yourself, Gates, and the others stepped forward about giving away.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's here, Warren, Ronald Perlman, and Sandy Weill. And,
long list of very wealthy people across the country.
Right.
What was behind that? because I know, and you have mentioned before, that was your plan anyway.
And all 40 of those that signed the letter, that was always their plans. They're going to give away.
Was there something else?
Yeah, sure. Gates
here?
And Buffett came up with the idea. They deserve the credit. If you do something like this, you get publicity and you get people other than those who were going to do it anyways to start thinking about doing it. You know, if you're really phenomenally lucky, and all these 40 are, me included, I think we all have an obligation to help each other, but if you're phenomenally lucky, you probably can help more. What's interesting is the press keeps wondering, well, how do we know you're going to give every penny away? Huh? I mean, I always want to turn the reporter and say, what are you giving away? People are generous and they want to give away their money. And if people say, well, you're going to tell them where to give it. No, the whole beauty of private philanthropy is with 40, these 40 people, you'll have 40 different views. You'll do 40 different things or 40 times something different things. And that's what's great about, and these people, I think, are, you know, role models. And, some of these people, I don't know. When you wrote this letter, you said this and that and the other thing. Come on, these are people giving away. My kids are taken care of. I said, you know, I can do more for my kids through my philanthropy than my will. I want them, I'm giving them a nest egg. They'll have to work for the rest of their lives. That's what you want them to do. I've seen too many people spoiled because they just never had to work. And it's, you know, also remember, these 40, they virtually all made their own money, so they would have that kind of, me included, would have that kind of an attitude. But leaving a better world, less disease, better education, more art. I mean, those are things you could do for your kids that really make a difference in their lives.
Got to go to a break, but the state of New York, in its wisdom, is now going to tax people over $10 million.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get in trouble. Maybe I still will. Yesterday, I'll repeat it because I really believe this. Somebody said, well, you know, would anybody else do this? I said, I don't think anybody else is as stupid as we are.
Okay.
This is the dumbest thing. When we want private philanthropy to step in, you're going to make it more expensive for private philanthropy to do it? What I miss?
Something, because I think we all missed it, except those that came up with the idea. 10 minutes before 9 o'clock, we'll get to your telephone calls. Your questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg are next.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. We're doing it. We're doing it with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, we've got a full bank of phones. Let's start right here with Tim. Tim, you've got the mayor go.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Good morning, my fellow Americans, everybody. My question for you, Mayor, is regarding the budget deficit. Every year, you know, we continually have more and worse budget deficits, and we brainstorm on how we can get them down. Now, my question is, how come you never mentioned maybe reconstructing the pensions for, like, the teachers? Because, the amount that they pay into
the pension. Okay, Tim, number one, I think I've talked about it every time, because the pension cost to our city, to New York, I'm sure it's similar in New Jersey, we in New York City spent 10% of our entire budget on pensions. And when I came into office, the pensions cost $1.1 billion a year to the taxpayers. Now it's $7.6 billion, and the city had nothing to do with that. That you can't blame on us, but we've got to pay for it. It's Albany that keeps giving these pension benefits, and the assumption in the pension system is that you get 8% return. The only one I know that's ever gotten 8% return over a long period of time, Bernie Madoff. You cannot get 8%.
And we know where Bernie is.
We know where Bernie is. I mean, fundamentally, it's an unrealistic assumption. And if you don't make the 8%, then the city has to put more money in. That's one of the problems. We have, incidentally, hired a woman, Ranji Nagaswamy, to represent us on the pension board. She's a great immigrant story. Came here from India, made it to the top, giving back to the city. But she's a real expert, and she will represent us, and she'll work with the John Lewis people who are running the system and find some ways to reduce the cost. And we have a guy, Bud Larson, who has been a chair of the Maine Pension Board, and he's going to continue really to be the point person for us on the budget and policy and economic issues regarding the pension system. But I think we'll have a great team with Ranji joining.
And the other thing is, so happy
we could attract her, because you know something like that is worth their weight in gold.
And as you've already pointed out many times, you can't cut anybody's pension.
The state constitution says even the state can't take away a pension benefit once they grant it. It's a phenomenally one-sided piece of legislation. So the only thing we can do, Tim, is to have a different pension system for people who haven't joined yet. And for them, and it would be Tier 5. So we've already done this three other times. We went from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, and 3 to 4. We've got to do it a fourth time and go to 4 to 5. The trouble is, of course, when you have that, then later on the Albany comes back and sweetens them, so there isn't that much difference. But you know, because nobody's looking, the pension beneficiaries, the unions say, you know, just do this, we'll help you in the polls, and the public doesn't bitch and say, oh, well, you know, it's just built in, and I feel sorry for him and that sort of thing. But he's right, we cannot afford this.
All right, Connie, you're going to be next for the mayor. Go right at it.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, Connie.
I'd like to know that you're laying off all the trades in all the city hospitals. Is this a step like you did years ago to try and sell all the city hospitals?
We're not selling any hospitals. If anything, the public hospitals are taking on more. If you remember, St. Vincent's closed, and our public hospitals have had to pick up the slack. We're not laying off people to close hospitals or to sell them. We're laying off or downsizing when we have to, simply because there's only a limited amount of money. And the health care bill will help in some ways, but it'll hurt us in others. And we've just got to adjust to the reality that there's not that kind of money anymore. But we're certainly not selling any hospitals.
All right, Connie, thank you for the good call. Kevin, you're up next. You've got the mayor.
Hey, John, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Mayor, my question is, the Bush tax cuts, which you feel should stay in place, are going to expire. Representative Nadler, in his district, he's for the tax cuts to expire, only he wants them to not affect his constituents in his district. I'd like your comment on that.
I did read that in the paper. I'm not sure of the real details. I think it's fair to say that everybody understands we have to have taxes, and we all want to tax the other guy. So, you know, congressmen and senators work very hard to try to defer or push the burden off to somebody else. That's natural, and I suppose you can argue that's what they're supposed to do. To say that it doesn't hurt, taxes are not good for anybody. They reduce incentives to work and to create values and to make investments and to hire more employees and those kinds of things. And the other hand, taxes are necessary. That's how we pay the firefighters and the cops and the sanitation workers and the teachers and that sort of thing. The real issue is, how do you find something fair? And while I think if you were to end the Bush tax breaks, you should end them for everybody, not just for the handful of people, because the handful of people that you're going to tax are the people that probably will create more jobs than anybody else, and that just isn't fair. It's also a dangerous time to do that. So I'm not opposed to taxation. It's a necessary thing. It's making it fair. And when you have an economic problem like we do today, maybe that's not quite the right time, and maybe you should just postpone for another year or two and then do it.
All right. Any sense, real fast, one word, sense which way Congress is leaning?
No idea.
Okay, good. Mr. Mayor, thank you always. Always enjoy talking with you, and I will look forward to next Friday. That's going to do it for us on the John Gambling Show. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You've just heard John Gambling. New York's best news talk continues next with Glenn Beck on 710 WOR.